You're with us on The Morning Show. I'm Kate Archer-Kent. Heads up quick here on our programming plans today. The Senate impeachment trial of President Trump resumes today at noon with a second day of written questions from senators. You can hear live NPR coverage on Wisconsin Public Radio's News and Classical Network and online at WPR.org. Here on the Ideas Network, we're providing updates, we're providing analysis, and we invite you into the conversation next hour as we have a pair of political scientists who are joining us. Right now, it's the coronavirus outbreak continues to grow, mostly in Asia. Here in Wisconsin, public health officials, hospitals, and universities taking precautions. UW-Madison health officials sent a notice yesterday to faculty, staff, and students. The Office of the Provost is discouraging non-essential travel to China during spring semester. And university-sponsored student travel to China is now banned. Yesterday, we saw British Airways, Air Canada suspended all flights to mainland China. Delta joined the growing number of airlines reducing service. So what questions do you have about the coronavirus? We're at 800-642-1234. Dr. Ryan Westergaard is Chief Medical Officer and State Epidemiologist for Communicable Diseases at the Wisconsin Department of Health Services. Dr. Westergaard, welcome back to the Ideas Network.
Good morning, Kate. I'm very happy to be here.
So more than a dozen nations with a handful of cases, including here in the U.S., they're isolating patients, they're monitoring. Wisconsin is a state with a suspected case. What can you tell us?
Well, like many areas of the country, there have been a number of people who have returned from the area of China that's affected and are living in Wisconsin and developed respiratory symptoms. It's flu season and respiratory virus season after all. So because of the known person-to-person transmission in that area of China, returning travelers are really the highest risk individuals. So when someone meets these criteria, having been to the affected area and developing symptoms of fever and shortness of breath, they become what we call people under investigation. And those are the criteria for getting tests for the virus. So we've had a number of those folks in the state who have become sick. So far, there have been no confirmed cases. Some have been tested. We've had one test come back negative. We're waiting results on the other. So as of this time, we're very cautiously anticipating the fact that we may have cases confirmed in Wisconsin. But to date, we don't. We're very hopeful. We're crossing our fingers that the reason these individuals have symptoms is something else, but we're prepared to do what needs to be done if we do have a confirmed case.
How many people are being monitored?
As of yesterday, when we updated our totals, and it's an ongoing process, there were 7 total people who have met those criteria to have specimens collected and sent to the CDC for testing. One of them came back negative, and the other 6 are working their way through the pipeline. At this time, there's only one laboratory in the country that's doing the test, and that's in Atlanta at the Centers for Disease Control. So there's a bit of a backlog, and the throughput of that lab isn't as quick as it could be, or as it will be eventually. So there's some backlog.
Because certainly they're getting cases from all over the country having to do the testing. What does the testing entail?
The testing involves testing specimens, respiratory specimens, or even blood from someone who is suspected of having the case, and they detect the RNA or the genetic material of the virus. It's a test called a PCR test, which has become quite common, and it's very sensitive and effective. But the big limitation in this is that this is a brand new virus. There has been no test, so they essentially had to invent it right at the beginning of the outbreak. So that's what's taking some time.
What happens if a case is confirmed in Wisconsin?
If we have a case in Wisconsin, we will do the things that we have been doing for respiratory infections for generations, if not hundreds of years, which is isolate the patient. First of all, care for the patient, make sure that they're getting the care that they need, but understand who the person has been in contact with, provide evaluation for those people, and separate or isolate them to reduce the chances that a person with confirmed infection is in close contact with people who are susceptible. So we have a number of people who are under investigation. Local health departments are already prepared and have probably already taken some inventory of close contacts. So we are prepared to jump into action and provide the services and the follow-up and the contact tracing that's necessary when and if we do.
Is the Department of Health Services in touch with people who have recently traveled from China? And if so, what are you telling them?
There have been a good number of people who have traveled from the Wuhan city, which is the most highly affected area in China in general. So we field a lot of calls from both individuals and from providers. And the most important message for people returning is just to what to watch out for. Just having been to the area at this time, if someone has no symptoms, we don't do any invasive or active monitoring. We really just try to educate people about the need to look out for respiratory symptoms, particularly fever and shortness of breath and sore throat, like we mentioned, and ensure that people have know what to do if that happens. And that mostly involves calling your healthcare provider before coming in, so we know that people. You know, potentially a sick person coming into a waiting room, we can isolate them and put on masks. So it's really a matter of being prepared and being educated.
So when might these symptoms arise? Like, what is the timeline for seeing this virus emerge with symptoms?
Yeah, that's a good question. It varies by virus, and it's something we call the incubation period, the time between someone becomes exposed or the infection starts in a person's body and when they start having symptoms. Our best guess at the incubation period for this virus is anywhere between 2 days and 2 weeks. So the cases that have been reported now in some of the scientific literature, many had symptoms within that early day, within 2 to 3 days, but some as long as 2 weeks. So that's really what we're going with right now. If someone has been returned and from the affected area and 2 weeks goes by, they're considered to be pretty low risk.
Talking with Dr. Ryan Westergaard, Chief Medical Officer at the State Health Department, about the coronavirus, you can join in with your questions. Are you concerned about this epidemic? At what point would you start to worry? And what do you want to know about the virus itself and how it spreads? Join in at 800-642-1234. You can email ideas@wpr.org. Dr. Westergaard, the CDC is currently checking people who arrive from Wuhan, China, to the United States. What does the screening involve?
So at airports, they've set up checkpoints to monitor symptoms with a symptom checklist or a brief interview, and also a non-invasive temperature gauge. So people come off the plane, they answer a questionnaire about whether they're having symptoms. They get observed whether they appear to be having symptoms like coughing and sneezing, and they use a touchless thermometer to check temperatures. I think the biggest part of that also, which we just sort of mentioned, is that that's also the opportunity to educate the people on what the signs or symptoms are. So that as of yesterday, those procedures are in place at now 20 airports, which have been designated as quarantine areas. So there's been preparedness work at those airports, and people arriving from that area of the world are sort of systematically being evaluated in that way.
And preparedness means resources. Resources means funding and supplies. Does Wisconsin have adequate state resources to prevent the spread and to control coronavirus here?
It's really a matter of where this goes. Right, you know, right now, the level of preparedness, both at the state level and the local health department level, this is what we do well. We prepare for pandemic flu. We've got plans in place. We have epidemiologists who are trained, local health personnel know what to look for. And so at this time, I feel like the level of preparedness is good and level of resource is good. But the big unknown, of course, is how big does this get? I think it's been very encouraging that after a week, we've had 5 cases. Most of the tests that make it through CDC are coming back negative. As of yesterday, between the beginning of this week and yesterday, Wednesday, there weren't any new cases. So we're still at 5 confirmed cases. So we're hopeful and cautiously optimistic that if this isn't going to be a large epidemic, and there has been no evidence of person-to-person spread among the people who are in the United States who have been so. But we have to be prepared, and we're in discussions about what do emergency resources look like, and that's part of their preparedness.
We had heard some reports in previous days that there were several UW-Platteville students who had recently taken a trip to Wuhan and were being observed for signs. And I'm going to make an assumption here that they were younger people. And I'm wondering, does the coronavirus hit younger people or older people differently?
I think it's too early to know that for sure. In general, people who get any number of respiratory illnesses, if you're people who are older or have weaker immune systems, are more likely to have severe symptoms. I don't believe we have clear evidence that there are specific age groups within that, other than that general principle that people are at increased risk of having severe disease.
How do you feel the communication is with the CDC right now on this?
The CDC has been having daily media releases and also discussions, making themselves available for state and local health departments to answer questions. And that's sort of the public facing. What's less visible to the public is sort of the daily conversation between people at the state level and the CDC. Part of our responsibility at the state health department level is to really be a conduit for the latest science and latest epidemiologic data that gets aggregated at CDC and translate that to our partners here in Wisconsin and in communities. So I feel like the pipeline for information sharing back and forth at these levels has been pretty good so far. And I think that's really been a strength, both based on responses to previous infectious disease outbreaks and a lot of work in preparedness.
We're talking about coronavirus with the state epidemiologist for communicable diseases. Ryan Westergaard is here fielding your questions about coronavirus. The disease has spread far and wide in China. Have you traveled to China recently? Are you concerned about your own vulnerability to this virus? What do you want to know about symptoms, about risk, about symptoms that when they present? Join in 800-642-1234. You can email ideas@wpr.org. We'll be back in a moment with more with Ryan Westergaard right here on the Ideas Network. We're getting an update on coronavirus here in the morning show. I'm Kate Archer-Kent. China has quarantined tens of millions of people as it struggles to contain coronavirus, which has infected more than 7,700 people and killed 170. That's as of the latest reports this morning. What do you want to know about how this virus spreads and its chances for being contained? What questions do you have for Wisconsin's chief medical officer? We're at 800-642-1234, and Dr. Ryan Westergaard stays with us. Let's go right to the phones now. Dan is joining us from Milton. Hi, Dan.
Hi, Kate. I'm wondering if the coronavirus can survive a trip during manufacturing when they ship these items out. Can it survive the trip overseas in a container?
Great question, Dan. Thanks.
Yeah, thanks, Dan. That's a really good question. One of the things that makes a virus is that it doesn't actually live outside of a cell of another living thing, usually a plant or an animal. So when a virus is not connected or infecting a person, we really talk about it. Is it a viable infectious particle? And then viruses vary with how long they can be viable in the environment on a surface, for example. And it depends on sort of the characteristics of the virus, whether it has a protein envelope on the outside. What we know about the coronaviruses in general is that they do not persist in the environment very long. It's measured probably in hours, not days. So it seems very implausible that on a surface in a product shipping that would be a real risk.
Since the coronavirus is relatively common, why is this strain so much worse?
That's a great question as well. So we're calling this the 2019 novel coronavirus. So a good question is, well, what is a not novel coronavirus? So a coronavirus is a pretty large family of respiratory viruses that are very common and actually pretty well known. They're a major cause of the common cold. They circulate in humans every year. There's also coronaviruses other types of coronaviruses that infect animals that have no impacts on humans. So another thing about viruses is that they're very specific for a certain kind of cell and a specific kind of host. So when what happened with this novel coronavirus is that as all viruses evolve over time, this one evolved in a way that where it previously was infecting an animal, we think it might be a bat, developed the ability just through random mutations and through evolutions to be able to infect humans. And it's new to our species, and because of the changes that it underwent, it can cause more severe disease. In a clinical sense, what's the main difference is, whereas common coronaviruses tend to be upper respiratory infections, common cold, sore throat, sinusitis, what we've learned about this one so far is it tends to have a predilection for the lower respiratory tract, so the lungs. So that means viral pneumonia. So that was one of the early signs where there were people who were quite sick, became very severely ill. So this virus is different in terms of the clinical presentation in that it causes lower respiratory and more severe infection. And then it's distinct genetically. So it's a virus that hasn't been seen by the human species before. And that's what makes it very concerning. We're still learning as we go. But that's really why it's been an alarming and has had a lot of resources put into understanding the virus.
Let's go to Ken now in Madison with a question. Hi, Ken.
Good morning. I apologize I'm entering late, but typically I go to Southeast Asia and my layover is in Shanghai. So to be honest, I haven't heard yet whether there's a travel quarantine for China, Shanghai in particular. And it's typically a 3 to 4 hour layover strictly
in the airport.
Shanghai's main airport.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Mm-hmm.
Well, this is a situation that's changing by the day. The federal government has really taken responsibility to inform the public on any necessarily travel restrictions. And on the CDC website, they'll have sort of their standard recommendation. Initially, there was a travel restriction. I think it was a level 3 to the Hebei or the province where Wuhan, where the large number of cases were, that is under evaluation, where I think now there's restrictions to avoid non-essential travel to other parts of China. My recommendation, Ken, is to go to that CDC travel website and look at and consider your travel plans and get them up to date advice from the CDC, who really have their finger on the pulse of the risk to travelers.
And we'll be sure to get a link on our page as well, on the morning show page at WPR.org, to that CDC site. Let's go to John now in Milwaukee. Hi, John.
Hey, good morning, everybody. Thanks for taking my call. My question is if the number of identified victims in China was only like at 80 and they began quarantining their own citizens, which is like now over 100 million, and we're already at 5, at what point will the CDC recommend quarantining? And the second question, I hate to drag them into it, but what if the CDC, what if it becomes serious and we need to start beginning to quarantine cities and further restrict travel very extensively? And Mr. Trump says no.
John, thanks for the call. Can you tackle some of those questions on quarantining and what that process is like?
Yeah, well, quarantining specifically sometimes means isolating a person to their home and restricting their mobility. That's in general sort of isolating people. Separating infected people from susceptible people is a a time-tested public health strategy. Whether it comes from the federal government for a whole city or for an individual in a house is a matter of degrees. So I think the best approach in the United States is really to respond in a thoughtful way as the outbreak unfolds. Right now, we have cases who are voluntarily isolating at home while they're under investigation, and individuals who are infected have that same advice during the very period where they might be infectious. They're required to stay home and stay out of work. So, in Wisconsin, the people who are investigation are sort of voluntarily. We don't have plans to do isolation or travel restrictions on a large scale, but it'll be really tied to the whether and if, and I think this is important, right now we don't have any evidence of person-to-person spread. All the cases have come from people who have returned from the areas of China where person-to-person spread is ongoing. So isolation is important at this point because we have the opportunity to actually prevent an outbreak in the first place.
Quarantines can also cause fear in people and distrust. Is that a concern to you, public health officials?
I think it's a critically important issue in the same way that trust between patients and their personal physicians is so important to sharing information and promoting health. Trust between public health and the community is important. And so I think what some of the things that have been really valuable in this experience over the past week is the ability to connect with people through the media and through social media and community events to answer questions. And I think a big part of building trust is to communicate clearly and thoughtfully all the uncertainty that we have. I think we owe it to people to tell people what we don't know. And at this stage in this epidemic, that's quite a lot.
The coronavirus has now infected more people than the SARS virus in 2002 and 2003. Is that troubling to you?
It is. It seems like the SARS virus, which was also a novel coronavirus, sort of possibly also from a bat source, had a lot of genetic similarities. So again, with the normal caveat that we're still learning as we go, it seems to be a good model for both the transmissibility and the clinical spectrum. So the total number of SARS cases back in 2002-2003 was about 8,400. So we're just about past that now, and we don't know which direction it's going to go. We've been reassured that it doesn't seem to be much more highly transmissible than that. And the encouraging thing is that after the last cases of SARS were reported, it hasn't reemerged. So there hasn't been SARS virus circulating in the community for a long time. This gives us hope that with good containment efforts and a good approach now, that we won't have a sustained transmission of the new novel coronavirus.
Dr. Westergaard, thank you for joining us.
It's been a pleasure. Thanks for inviting me.
Dr. Ryan Westergaard, Chief Medical Officer and State Epidemiologist for Communicable Diseases for the Wisconsin Department of Health Services. Just ahead, we get an update on the Senate impeachment trial of President Trump. Two political science professors from UW-Madison will explain what's happening and what to watch for. I'm Kate Archer-Kent. This is The Morning Show, and you're listening to the Ideas Network.